Welcome to the Husband Material Podcast, where we help Christian men outgrow porn. Why? So you can change your brain, heal your heart, and save your relationship. My name is Drew Boa, and I'm here to show you how. Let's go. Today on the show, we have Chris Bruno, author of The Man Maker Project and CEO of Restoration Project, Restoration Counseling, multiple podcasts, but the whole thing, at least in terms of restoration, is calling men to heal their wounds, know their God, and restore their world.
Drew, it's great to be with you today. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been fun to get to know you a little bit, and I feel like our missions are so complementary.
Yes.
We are both focusing on helping men, and while Husband Material is really specifically focused on freedom from porn, you're helping men develop into fathers and brothers. You're focusing on fatherhood and brotherhood. How did you come to care so deeply about those things?
You know, the short story is really it's born out of my own life and my own story. I was overseas in ministry. I was a young man, a young father. And as in that kind of a space, I didn't have someone to look up to. I was under-fathered, I would say, as a boy and as a young man. And I didn't have a father that I could go to, and especially living in, you know, a distant scenario where I was overseas. And so there was a lot, Drew, rumbling around in my own life and my own heart that I came really to the edge of myself far too many times that I then needed to explore. I needed to find some men to father me because I felt so unfathered myself. And in the overseas scenario, that ended up being authors, that ended up being men who had written books about this kind of stuff, about the inner life, about your man's soul, like that kind of stuff. And so I found these authors and really developed a very personal relationship, one way as it was, from me to them. They had no idea that I was reading their stuff, right? Or that I was being fathered by their words, but it really grew out of my own life and story. And then when we returned to the States, it became a passion of mine because I saw for myself some of the growth that had happened there. And I saw a lot of other younger men, younger than me, who needed the same kind of fathering. So it became a real passion in me. And then at the end of the day, I think there is an epidemic of fatherlessness across the planet. Yeah. And when I say fatherlessness, I do indeed mean those who literally do not have fathers, but I also mean kind of the spiritual, personal, emotional space of not being fathered well. And if we look at the correlation between pornography, if we look at the correlation between, you know, drugs and incarceration and depression and obesity and academic struggles, all of them come back to some lack in the area of fathering. The present and kind and engaged father has a positive impact in all those other things. And the lack of a present and engaged father has an impact in all of those things. And so that's where, as far as the work in the kingdom that I do, I wanted to focus really on the epicenter of what it is that causes the ripple effect of so many problems in the world.
Yeah, if you can knock down that one domino, so many others will fall.
Right. Absolutely. And so that's where strategically we decided we were going to focus our work.
Man, that is good. When we are fathered or refathered, that not only releases us from porn, but when we are released from porn, that opens up these doors so that we can break generational curses and become great fathers too.
You know, and I think in the work that I do as a counselor in the area of pornography, I think so many men come to the place of pornography as kind of a heart mitigation strategy, heart medication strategy. Well, if we can go upstream a ways, the unfathered nature of a man's life is really what opened the door for pornography to have its place. And that when if we can be mindful in our own lives, when, you know, if we're struggling with pornography ourselves, there is the addiction, there is the struggle that is near and present right now. But there are younger parts of our lives and our stories that were unfathered, that you just said, if we're refathered in those places, that there's some significant healing that happens in the, you know, pornography addiction.
Yeah. This is kind of weird to think about. If we actually just take a step back and say, so you're telling me that my pursuit of porn has something to do with my dad?
Absolutely. It absolutely does. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he was addicted to pornography. It means that something in your little boy heart was not attended to. And the not attended to is what opened the door to you seeking out that attending.
This is kind of trippy to say. It's almost like porn is serving as a substitute father.
100%. It's serving as a substitute of many things. And one of them, most significantly, is the attending to the internal places.
When I first heard that, it blew my mind. And it just seemed so weird. I think particularly because the type of sexual stimulation that I would pursue had more to do with women. I work with a lot of guys who specifically are attracted to father porn. And that makes a lot of sense. We can draw kind of a clear connection there. And yet, what you're saying is that this applies to every type of porn, not just those featuring older men.
Right. Well, and it's pornography is going to fall into the same categories as alcohol, excessive working out, eating too much. It's going to working too much. Any other substance, if you will, whether it be an actual substance or a process. These are all idols that our hearts go to in order to fill the needs that our heart is not being met with. And so, yes, it does come back to our fathers in many ways, because that's what we're actually looking for and longing for.
And at the very beginning, when you talked about your story, you said something to the extent of, I was underfathered. How do I know if I was underfathered?
That's an excellent question. And we know we are underfathered when two things are true. When I internally do not have the presence and the sense of, like, I have what it takes to be the man that God has called me to be. That's not saying I know what to do. Because... Right. Yeah. We don't know what to do half the time or 90% of the time. Like, I don't know what to do in a scenario with my kids. I don't know what to do in a scenario with my job or my wife or my dog. Right. I don't know what to do most of the time. So it's not saying that I know what to do. It's saying that I know that there's some internal blessing that has occurred in my life that has solidified my heart to say I have what it takes. Even Jesus himself was blessed by the Father. And it says, like, this is my son whom I love and in whom I am well pleased. Like, if there's not that kind of blessing that has settled in your soul that says, I have what it takes, then there is an underfathering that has happened there. And Drew, I would say 99.5% of us men have not received that kind of blessing. Okay. The second thing that says I've been underfathered is that I don't, that's the internal space. The other one is an external. I don't have a man that I can go to who's a little bit further down the road than I am to both ask, what do I do in these scenarios, but then also reassure me that I have what it takes. If you find yourself in either of those two categories, then there is an underfathering scenario, right? And the reality of living in a broken and fallen world is that we are underfathered. There is not enough fathering in our world at all because of the state of things.
Somebody listening to this has to be thinking, but Chris, I love my dad. I had a great dad. Surely this doesn't apply to me.
Yeah. And if that person who says, I had a great dad, I love my dad, I want to say, like, blessings upon you. And may what he offered to you be enough. And I want to ask the question, has it been enough? Are there places still within you that long for more? Are there places within you that still ask the question, I don't know that I have what it takes? And if that, then none of this, Drew, is to throw any dad under the bus, right? We're not trying to blame anybody. We're not trying to say, hey, the idyllic childhood that you have in your memory was actually not idyllic, right? I'm not trying to say anything like that. All I'm saying, all I'm asking guys to do is to wonder, could there still be more?
Yeah. Yeah. And in the end, our biological fathers are just a taste, just a sliver, just a glimmer of the father.
Right. And the beauty of this, and this is why our ministry focuses on fatherhood and brotherhood, is that where men have been underfathered, brothers can father each other. Mm. And fathering is not something that is has to be an older man to a younger man. Like, I can be fathered. My son can father me, right? Wow. He's 20 and he can father me. So I feel like fathering is an action verb that God has given to every man to father. Every man fathers, whether or not he has biological children, right? And no matter what age he is. So that's where, you know, we don't have to look to our biological dad. He is just a sliver because there's so much other fathering available to us all over the place.
There's an ocean.
Yeah.
We may not realize it. So let's talk about that. You're taking the word father, which I have always understood to be a noun, and turning it into a verb. What is that verb to father?
If we're going to talk about father, we have to talk about mother. Mm. And I think in the way it's, and I want to talk about mother for just a moment, because the way that God created mothers and the way that God created fathers are both similar and somewhat different. So the mothering is in the creation of life, right? It is in the partnering between women and God to bring life into the world, to create life. And there is a feminine substance that gets passed physiologically between a mother and the baby, as the baby is growing in the womb, after birth, with nursing, like there is a physical substance that is passed. And then there is also the care and the nurture that is happening between mother and child, right? That is the partnering with God to create life. That's mothering. In my mind, there is a partnership with God to sustain life. And sustaining life is not a physical substance, but it is an emotional and a spiritual substance that fathers pass on to their children. And that primarily happens through physical and emotional presence. You show up, that you're there, and that you're engaged. And then through words, words of life. And so just as God created life through words, fathering is a partnership with God to create life through words. And that is why the words of God the Father are offered to Jesus the Son, and why it is so important for us to hear words from our dads. And how often words are either absent or violent. Hmm. And as intentional present fathers to our own children, to orient ourselves to the action of offering life words and blessing our children. That's what I think, to answer your question, when I say father is a verb, I say bringing your masculine words to the world.
Yeah. And it's so amazing to hear a little bit of your story and see how men brought you their words from across the world, through pages in a book.
Yes. Yeah. And fortunately, since then, I've been able to meet a lot of those men and be in relationship with a lot of those men, which is
the other side too.
Right. So I've been able to actually hear those words from them. But yeah, but primarily, Drew, it has not been through authors and speakers and all that kind of stuff. Primarily the fathering that has happened with me has been through my brothers. And I have to let them into my life and into my story, and not into, yes, into my sin, but that's not primary. It is letting them into who God created me to be, and then letting my accountability with them, my accountability partner stuff with them, not be about my sin, but about how am I bringing about the glory that God has written into me. My friends hold me accountable to that. My brothers hold me accountable to bring yourself, Chris. That, I think, is where they're fathering me in some ways that I was underfathered and continue to be underfathered and look to them for that kind of fathering.
Wow. So your brothers are not only spending quality time and offering their emotional presence, they're able to bless you, not just the good work you do, not just your success, but actually the real Chris.
Yeah. Brothers know my story and they speak to my story. And the way in Restoration Project we talk about it is that we're actually hunting each other's glory. That we are in pursuit of the glory that God has written into the life of one another.
Yeah.
And it is embedded in our story. And our story is where we, what has happened to us. That's true. Those kinds of experiences and events that happened. But far more, it is who has God written me to be and how will I bring that to bear in the world? And I think a lot of guys have, if you think of concentric circles, right? There's strangers and acquaintances, and then you have buddies, and then you might have friends, but really at the core are brothers. And I could explain what I mean by all those different layers, but really at the core, the brothers are the ones that know our stories and hunt our glory.
And brothers are the ones who have the right to father.
Yes. Yes. We invite them to father. Mm. And sometimes, and I'll also say with, to bring their strength to me, but also to bring their tenderness to me. Mm. To speak their words of strength and power. Yes, you have what it takes. And it's bring their words of tenderness to me that say, and I care deeply for you, and I weep with you, and I grieve with you, and I celebrate with you, right? Those are the kinds of brothers that I'm talking about.
So beautiful. And when we don't have that, what happens?
When we don't have those kinds of brothers?
When we don't have men who are hunting down our glory, I feel personally like a lot of porn recovery and accountability turns into sharing a dirty laundry list of the sexual sins that I've committed or all the bad things that I've done in my life, and we call that vulnerability. Whereas it sounds like what you're saying is that in brotherhood, we don't focus there. We focus on who we are, on who we're becoming, on who we were made to be. And whatever has gotten in the way plays a role in that story, but it's not the whole story. And when we can see each other's goodness and strength and beauty, then something new unfolds and it's so much better.
Right. And, I think when we don't have men like that who are hunting our glory, we will automatically default to checkboxes through days, counting days of sobriety. We automatically default into some rote confessions or, like you said, those quote-unquote vulnerabilities. I think there's a big difference between authenticity and vulnerability. Mm. I think authenticity is letting someone see kind of through the window into my living room. I'll let them see, right? That's being authentic. You get to see what's inside. Vulnerability is actually inviting somebody in. And I think far too many porn recovery programs do get to the point of authenticity without vulnerability.
Yeah.
And really to invite somebody in, right, sounds like that's not who you are. Drew, that's, I know who you are. And for you to act out in those ways, that's not who you are. Because I know who you are. So don't tell me what you did, right, or what you should do. Let's talk about what you were looking for. What what wounds in your life have not been healed that drove you to look at, you know, or act out in that way. That's what I want to talk about. Because what you're looking for is, and it is part of who you are. Oh, you're looking for connection? Oh, you must be a man who's been written by God to seek connection. Oh, you're looking for conquest? You must be a warrior. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Right? You're looking for her face, not her body. Oh, you must be a man who God has written into the, into him. How do I want to say this? Like someone who is actually wanting to appreciate the glory of the feminine in the face of who she is and not in the consumption of her body. Let's talk about that and not about what you did. I know what you did. We don't need to talk about that. So what happens with men who don't have that? That was your original question. We default into checkboxes. We default into counting days. We default into, I must be okay because I've not.
Yeah, which is kind of a puny life to live.
It leads to, you know, as a famous quote says, a life of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
It leads to a life of isolation. It leads to a life of really less than I think what God intended for us to have. And it makes me think of you know, C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters, where that is actually the place that evil wants us to be, in checkboxes and counting days, because it's so much less than what God designed for us to be and to live.
Well, let's talk about the alternative. So what happens when we begin to hunt down one another's glory with brothers, with fathers, with the kind of community that we were created for?
Oh, so much happens. First and foremost, when somebody begins to hunt our glory, there is no way in hell that we're going to believe them. Right? That when I begin to talk to you about what I see and who you are and your glory, your immediate defenses are going to be like, that's not true. That is not true. You don't know who really I am. Don't you know what I've done? Don't you know where I've been? You have no idea where my mind goes. You have no idea what porn I've seen or what I've sought out or how I've acted out. You have no idea. So I think the first immediate reaction is going to be like, you're wrong. Okay. The second is going to be, could it be true? Could God really have written something that good in me? Is there really the possibility that, as Ephesians talks about, you know, Paul talks about in Ephesians 2, could I really be a masterpiece of God, the workmanship of God? Could I be? And then immediately back to, there's no way. Right? There's no way. There's no way. Those are, I think, the beginning parts. But then I'll tell you, you know, when we begin to increase our appetite for our own glory and for the glory of God himself and through us, our appetite for pornography, for other addictions, almost becomes inconsequential. It begins to fade away. Because when the sun rises, the darkness flees, right? Mm-hmm. So when we allow for the sun to rise in our lives, there's going to be a sense of, yeah, the darkness is going to flee.
I don't need it anymore.
I don't need it anymore. And I don't want it anymore. And I actually begin to recognize how it's not that it's distasteful as in like a judgment, but it actually brings distaste to my mouth.
Yeah, it's lost its appeal.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes cardboard. We begin to like consume cardboard when we recognize when my life is full of all of the right and good things, then this other thing that I've been satiating my hunger with is just, it's not what I need or want anymore.
That's so good. I feel like there's so much alignment with what you're saying about what it looks like for us to hunt one another's glory and refather each other as brothers in what we're doing in my program called Husband Material Academy, because we do these hot seat coaching sessions where somebody gets on Zoom like this and you tell your story and I listen, one of the other students might listen, and we hunt down your glory. And at the end of each of those calls, everybody who's observing speaks those words of life and affirmation and appreciation. And the guy who just shared is thinking, these are some of the things that I hate about myself. These are some of the worst things that have ever happened to me. There's fear, there's shame, there's loneliness, there's all kinds of darkness. And then people are saying, wait, I see light in you. I see strength in you, beauty, goodness, glory. And it's almost overwhelming. It's like
too much to bear.
Yeah.
It's too much to bear. And it's, there's no convincing someone of it. The only way, Drew, that I feel like we can, yes, they can tell us those things and we can tell them back to them. And those are words of life, but we have to share how we have actually been experienced, right? Or how we have experienced that of you, right? That there's no arguing with data.
Yeah. Yeah. So telling somebody you're a great guy, or these vague generalities, they don't land. But right. When I can say, when you were in sixth grade and you brought your heart to your father in a way that he dismissed with so much cruelty,
Yeah. You
were modeling Christ-like love to him in that moment. There's something more specific, concrete, particular. It's harder to argue with that.
Absolutely. There is no argument with that. And that is exactly the moment where the enemy sought to steal, kill, and destroy that heart of that boy, that sixth grade boy. You know, the other thing is a lot of guys think about themselves in the conversations that I have when I talk about these things, like, well, about your fathering, you being underfathered, your story, your brothers, like all of that. And then very, very quickly, there's a, well, dang, what about me as a father to my children, right? That I have a boy who's that age and those things happened to me in my past story. He's at that age, like, dang, what am I going to do? How do I offer my children, my son, my daughter, something that I never received? And there's kind of a line of anxiety that happens there. There's a line of danger that people feel in the midst of that, right? Like, so when there's, but I don't know how many times guys have said, well, yeah, I'd love to talk about my story, but what do I do about my kids? What do I do about my own children and such? And to that, I would say, you know, just the mere fact that you're wondering that question is already 1,000 miles ahead of where your father was.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? That there is already enough in you that merely asks the question. And so let us not be afraid of what fathering we can offer when we know that we need to.
So we all have some degree of father hunger. Mm-hmm. It could be greater, it could be lesser. Doesn't matter. We all have this hunger, this need, this desire, and many of us are coming from a story of being wounded or being neglected by our fathers, and we want to father well. We want to do things differently. We want to break generational curses.
Yeah.
So for somebody who's asking that question, who's 1,000 miles ahead maybe of where his dad was, mm-hmm. what is necessary to father well?
A couple things I would say. First, is that there needs to be some level of father vision. That what is your vision for your child? And that's why I say you're already 1,000 miles ahead, is that you know that something different is needed. And so, like, what is your father vision? I think often our father stories were written by our dads by accident. Well, as fathers, how can we write them on purpose?
Wow.
And that is an opportunity that we have to do something different with our children. And so that takes, what is your father vision? And then secondly, it takes some level of you diving into your own story knowing you just a moment ago used the word Father Hunger, and I would say all of us, because we live on earth, have Father Hunger. And we will, whether we were fathered well or whether we were under or unfathered, we have Father Hunger. It transitions into Father Wound when our father neglected our needs, or like I said, didn't give us those words or gave us words of violence. Okay. So there's a father wound. All of us have father hunger. Our children have father hunger. That is not a sign that we are not good fathers. Mm. It is a sign that they are human.
Yeah.
And that we have the opportunity to feed their hunger. And so how will you recognize your own story and your own father wounds? And then step into places of like, I'm going to actually write the father story for my children on purpose. And that's the third thing I would say. So first is the vision. The second is your own story. The third is intention. And intention, as we talk about in Restoration Project, is different from attention. Attention is awesome and is very necessary. We need to turn our eyes towards our children. We need to set aside time to be with them, to give them our attention. But our intention is that I am thoughtful and I am putting plans in place to grow you and raise you and meet your needs, to feed the hunger, right? So those, then the final thing is actually like a plan. What is your plan, right? A lot of guys have plans for how they're going to spend their money or what their career path is going to be, or a workout plan, but do you have a fathering plan? And that plan is, right, like, this is what I'm going to do intentionally with them when they're 3, and then 9, and then 13, and then 20. Here's my plan. And I'm going to rally my resources, my finances, my time, my friends, my wife, like, I'm going to rally my resources to accomplish that plan. That child is going to be very, very different. And those family curses that you talked about, those generational curses, are broken not only by speaking into them and recognizing, like, what are the agreements that I've made and what do I need to, you know, pray over and spiritually break those curses and agreements. Yes, that's important, but my actions will break the curse.
Amen. Amen. This is so good, and it applies not just to those of us who have kids, but also if you are younger, if you're single, if you're dating, like, you can start now. Why not?
Yeah, Drew, last week I received an email from a guy who'd been reading the Manmaker Project, and he's 27, unmarried, and he wrote an email, said, hey, I want to get into counseling now so that when I am married and when I have children, I do not need to go about, you know, I'm not going to leak my stuff out all over my family members. I want to heal my wounds now, and I want to come to knowing my God, my Father, now so that I can restore. He's single. I love it. And you know what's going to happen in his life? The more that he does that with himself now, the more he's going to father his church. The more he's going to father his friends, the more he's going to father his school or his community, his neighbors, right? It's fathering is what we do, whether or not we have children.
Man, that's good. That's good. Fathering is what we do, and it has so many ripple effects.
Yeah.
Chris, what would you say to a man who has a son who's maybe a bit older and has been exposed to pornography and is already struggling with it?
Yeah. To the man struggling with it or to the son who's struggling with it?
Man, I guess both.
Yeah. I mean, you and I both know that statistically everyone will be exposed to pornography.
Yeah.
And so for that dad who knows that his son has been exposed or is struggling, here's kind of the flipping of the script, I think, of a lot of pornography approaches. Can that father bless his son's pursuit of porn? And here's what I mean about that, okay? That his son's pursuit of porn is an indicator of he is a boy of passion and desire. He is a a young man who wants something in the world, and can you bless his want? And how it maybe has been misapplied, right? How maybe it's been hijacked by evil's great conspiracy against all of us is I want to say, like, and of course it's been. And if we condemn that, we will lose the boy, but let's bless the desire and begin to help him reorient himself back to a right application of that desire.
So good.
Let's expect that our children are going to at least be exposed, if not struggle.
What you just said not only applies to a father with his son. For me, I see that all the time with my adult self and my younger self.
Oh, yeah.
Can I bless the little boy within me that way? Because if I can, we will have a much better relationship and I can help him get what he needs.
Right. Right. And here's a part of fathering too. What get him help what he needs equals fathering myself. Fathering the younger boy within me and honoring his desires, honoring and blessing those things as, buddy, you were designed by God to bring these things into the world. Bless you, and let's find a better way. And I will not condemn you for finding the way that you did. It wasn't helpful, but it was also, like I said, an of course. Of course you fell into that. What other options did you have?
I just feel a softening and a tenderness as you say that. Of course. Like, there's this relief.
Yes. Because that's what we need is our fathering.
Yeah. This relates to something that I've talked about before. I hear you throughout this conversation talking about four directions for fathering. One is being fathered by God. Mm-hmm. Another is finding that with other men and with our brothers. Mm-hmm. Another one is fathering myself. And then finally overflowing and becoming a father to others.
Yeah, it's like your male, right? Every cell of your body represents, the DNA of your body represents that aspect of you. Doesn't it also represent that you, in your DNA, are a father? To be fathered, to offer fathering, that is what we do everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a life worth living to me.
Yeah, right?
And you are helping guys do that. And Restoration Project has some awesome opportunities. So I wanted to let people know about a special, well, what are we going to call it? A special gift that you've set up.
Yeah. So one of the things, Drew, that we do at Restoration Project is we have both a year-long, kind of throughout the year, I should say, community of dads who are looking to be these kinds of dads, both for themselves in their worlds and in their lives, as well as for their children. And so it's an online community of dads called No Regrets. And the No Regrets community is designed to help us as fathers come to the end of our fathering journey, which will never end, right? Really, I'm talking about come to the end of our lives and look back on our fathering journey and say, I have no regrets. Mm-hmm. I don't regret how I handled things, right? And so the work that we're doing in the No Regrets community is to help guys have very practical blueprints and tools and conversations and all that, as well as then crafted and curated experiences for them to do with their children. So for your listeners, we'd love to offer 2 months free of the No Regrets community, and you can go and find that at restorationproject.net/husbandmaterial. restorationproject.net/husbandmaterial. And then if you go there, anybody who goes there will get 2 free months, and you get to kind of test, see what's going on and get some fathering. We also have intentional fatherhood experiences that we guide that are in the backcountry, in the mountains of Colorado and California and Utah and all over the country that we'd love to invite guys to. So you can check those out as well.
Yes. And I would love to invite you guys out here. Maybe we could do something in Santa Barbara one day.
Yeah, great. Well, we're going to be in Northern California this summer with a father-son backpack trip.
That's awesome. You going to Yosemite? Yeah.
The specific trail has not been released yet.
Okay. All right. My son is only 2 months old, so I don't think he's quite ready yet.
He's probably not going to go backpacking. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless he's in the backpack.
Yeah.
But he still needs some mommy milk for now. Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. What is your favorite thing about freedom from porn?
My favorite thing about freedom from porn is that whoever is free is living fully into that masterpiece. And here's why I love that. It's because when we are living fully into the masterpiece, when I see myself, I see other people living fully into that, we come to know the face of God. And that is what I want in my life, is I want to know the face of God. Mm. So when you are free and when I am free and when the next guy is free, we more fully reflect the glory of God to this world. That's what I love.
Amen. Me too. I'm curious, earlier you mentioned how sometimes maybe in a session with somebody, you will find their glory and say, oh, God must have made you this way. I'm just curious about maybe what you have discovered about how God made you as a masterpiece.
Oh, that is always one of the hardest things to answer, isn't it? How do I reflect the glory of God? Years ago, Drew, I went through a process in my own healing that that led to kind of a summary statement for me. And so the summary statement for me was, he helped me live out my story. And so, like, with regard to me, like, Chris helped me live out my story. And so some of the glory of God, I believe, in me is that I am an avid hunter of stories. And when it comes to that, like, that is part of my glory. Like, I love to spend time and actually see beyond, really see into the thin space between heaven and earth, and call that out. So that is one of my favorite things to do.
Well, thanks so much again. And for everyone else out there, always remember, you are God's beloved son, in you he's well pleased.